TBRI.
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 TOVD.
TBRI.
TBRI, Trust-Based Relational Intervention.
TBRI is an attachment-based
trauma-informed intervention
that is designed to meet the complex needs
of vulnerable children.
TBRI uses empowering principles
to address physical needs,
connecting principles for attachment needs,
and correcting principles to disarm fear-based behaviors.
While TBRI is based on years of attachment, sensory processing, and neuroscience research,
the heartbeat of TBRI is connection.
Hello, and welcome back to the TBRI podcast. On this show, we talk all about trust-based relational intervention, or TBRI. We talk about different elements of the model itself, and also about how TBRI is applied in various systems of care and practice. I'm Emily Pickett, producer of the podcast, and I'm so excited to introduce you to this week's episode. One of the topics we are most asked about is how TBRI works with teenagers and young adults. And in today's conversation, we are diving right in to talk all about what it looks like to have trust-based relationships with teens. Today's guest is Scott Waters, who is a longtime friend of the Karen Purvis Institute and is a TBRI practitioner and mentor. Scott is a therapist for Arms of Hope at a residential facility for children, teens, and single mother families. He specializes in counseling individuals of all ages who have experienced trauma and has used TBRI personally and professionally for 15 years. Scott and his wife, Sarah, have been adoptive parents for 13 years, and now that all their children have reached adulthood, they love to travel, connect with their children, and play with their precious grandkids. In this episode, Scott and our host, Sarah Mercado, talk about the teenage brain, the needs of teens versus those of younger children, and they go through each set of TBRI principles and talk about what those look like when applied in relationships with teenagers. This conversation is going to be another two-part episode series, so meet us back here next week to listen to the second part of this conversation. Today, we're going to dive into the teenage brain and the empowering and connecting principles, and then we will be back next week for the TBRI correcting principles and some fun TBRI stories from Scott. Without any further delay, here is our conversation with Scott Waters.
Hey, Scott, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on.
Without too much delay, would you just introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about how the heck did you come to know TBRI and what that journey's been like?
Okay. Well, my wife and I decided to become house parents at a children's home a little over 15 years ago. And we'd been married for 5 years. We had no experience in childcare, didn't have kids of our own. We actually had a dream of fostering and adopting older kids, and but that dream was not going to be a reality because our house was too full of in-laws at the time. So we decided to do the next best thing, which is to move to Bowles Children's Home at the with Arms of Hope. And we had no idea what we were doing. And about 2 weeks into our tenure here, while we were still doing our in-ratio training, the CEO shows up to one of our staff meetings, and he was just in absolute tears. And he said, we went into a meeting and we heard some words from Dr. Karen Purvis, and we've been doing this business of childcare for 84 years. And let me tell you, we've been doing it wrong for 84 years.
Oh, my mercy.
And so we need to do things differently, and we need to start today. And being a new caregiver, I had no clue what we were getting ourselves into. So I was just along for the ride. And we started reading The Connected Child as a staff. Our staff started watching the lecture videos. And we were just trying to figure out how we were going to make it work on our campus. Since then, I resigned from house parenting and took on other roles within the organization. But we were able to fulfill our dream of adopting older sibling groups, and our children were 7, 13, and 16 at that time. So it's been quite the journey for the past 15 years.
That sounds like a whole lot. And what do you do for the organization now?
I'm the clinical coordinator and lead program therapist at our Bowles Children's Home location.
Okay. And so today our hope is to, really talk about TBRI with teens. We get a lot of, this won't work with teens. This is for the littles. And actually, I think the reality is people are really trying to figure it out. And so I'm hoping today with all of your expertise that we can give them some really good just tidbits of information to maybe try it this way with a teen or try it that way. So, I mean, maybe before we get in it, does it work with teens?
I will quote the late, great Dr. Karen Purvis, and I'll say, you bet your boots it works. Because TBRI is all about relationships. And relationships with teens are super duper important. The interesting part about teens, especially if you've had children in your home at an early age, or even if they're bio kids, we've spent a long time scaffolding, but when kids hit adolescence, that prefrontal cortex goes into a reconstruction process. And so it's super important for us to recognize that and realize that TBRI works for teens. It's almost the same as with younger kids, but it's just different.
Right.
Same with adults, by the way, And I work a lot with young adults and even older adults, and it's all about relationship. So Yes, it works for teens. You just got to shift gears a little bit.
Right. I mean, so teens use a different language than little kids. And so their language of relationship is going to look a little different as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's really, I love working with teens because I love the language that they use. Mm-hmm. They are so curious. They are so in such an exploring phase that it's just fascinating once you realize that they're not little kids and they're not little kids grown up. They're a whole unique person. In fact, the part of the prefrontal cortex, what that helps us recognize is our identity. That part of me that looks in the mirror and sees that it's me looking at myself in the mirror, that's the prefrontal cortex that's doing that. So when it's going under reconstruction, teens are trying to figure out what their identity is. So they're asking really big questions. And I love the abstract thinking. I love the existentialism of teens because they're asking fantastic questions. And they're trying to figure out who they are.
Right.
The frustrating part is a lot of times when they're trying to figure out who they are, they start with who you are and they realize, I don't know who I am yet, but I'm not you. And that gets really frustrating for parents.
Yeah, it's so fun when you realize your kids don't want to grow up to be just like you.
Absolutely.
And usually, if we can step back and look at it, it's in the best way possible, right? Like, it's in the best way possible. But in those moments, it's hard to hear and see and watch and deal with it. So... probably same for you, Scott. People often come to us and say, just stop the behavior. Like, this isn't working. What we're doing isn't working. We get the same question about our teens. So when you think through the lens of TBRI, specifically in our connecting principles, which we know are our heartbeat, we're not going to get good hands and eyes with a teenager. Right.
Oh, no.
But when you think about the engagement strategies and you think about teens, do you have some advice for how we can use those engagement strategies in such a way to build that connection that the kids really want?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think with teens, I think the frustration for a lot of us as parents, it feels like we're in this desperate need to teach them all the things before they age out of our care. And that's not our role. Our role is not to teach them all the things because I spent a little bit of time in my bachelor's degree working on corporate training. And I realized that there's a big difference between teaching kids and teaching adults. And so teens are in that midway balance. And I say midway balance, they're either on one end of the spectrum or the other when it comes to learning and connecting. These are kids that want to learn and connect one way, and they want to recognize that I still need those snuggles, but leave me alone for a little bit, you know. And
right.
you just have to go along for the ride with a kiddo like that. So with adults, I found pretty quickly that adults really don't want to hear what you have to say unless it's relevant to them. And that's what happens with teens a lot too. And so we have to recognize when it's relevant for them. And so we take those teaching moments. So when I'm teaching and engaging with a child, I'm not trying to teach them anymore. That's no longer my role. That was the first 11 years of their life. Okay. So I'm pretty much done, and I'm going to accept that role when they allow me to. However, my main role in teaching and working with a kid or a teen is to give them a safe place to land as they go out and explore the world, whether they're exploring it while they're still living with me, or whether they're exploring after they've left me, or whether they've exploring the world after they've left me and come back. My wife and I are former empty nesters, but we took it while it could last. But all that to be said, when it's engaging with teens, it's following their lead on a lot of right. what's going on. We try to get interested in what they're interested in. Yeah. If they're trying to figure out who they are, we go along with the process. And one of the best ways, and to be honest with the teen when we're engaging, is to be truly honest. And if we don't know the answer, it's okay for us to not know the answer. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of parents and a lot of caregivers, they live out of that fear
right.
that, oh my gosh, my child is exploring whatever, and they're terrified that this is going to lead all the way down to the road of something awful. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't necessarily mean it. It just means yeah. that the kid's out there exploring.
Right.
And they're going to change their mind soon enough.
Well, they still have that foundation that we built in that first 11 years, right?
Absolutely.
And I think that while they're pushing against who we are and deciding who they want to be, they might not land with everything that we've taught them along the way, but I think when a lot of those foundational things, they stick, you know, and so.
Absolutely. And even if you adopted teens like I did, mm-hmm. You never know what you're going to get. Right. So the way my wife and I looked at it when we adopted the older kids, and even when I'm working with teens now, it's I'm going to take and follow, go along for the ride. I'm just glad to be part of the journey with them.
Right.
I get to be a part of something special and a really monumental time in their life. And having that attitude versus saying, oh my gosh, I got to teach this kid all the things, or I've got to make sure that this kid doesn't turn out to be a certain way. It's just a futile attempt.
Yeah. I think that's a great little moment for us as adults serving teens in mindfulness, when we start to hear ourselves going after all the things. I mean, I remember when my oldest was leaving for college, I was like, did I even teach her how to iron? Wait, do I know how to iron? Like, you know, and I'm trying to shove all those last minute things in. And I think that's a great place for us to be mindful when we feel ourselves doing that we've done it. It's okay.
Yeah.
If she goes to college and doesn't know how to iron, oh well, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right now she needs connection. Right now they need connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I loved going through grad school and realizing I don't have to have all the answers. I just got to know where to find them.
Right.
And that's what we're teaching our teens, is she doesn't have to know how to iron.
Right.
All she needs to know is who to call when it comes time to iron something, you know,
probably not her
and
mom.
Then you could, right. Or it could be something, but then you'll also help. I remember my oldest daughter, she decided to go to university in Oklahoma, and we adopted out of the state of Texas, where she had full tuition provided by the state of Texas. Mm-hmm. And she decided to go to a private university in Oklahoma, which was not free. And so I just looked at her and said, okay, if this is the choice you want to do, I can't pay for it because I work for a nonprofit.
Right.
But I will help you find the money. And having that attitude with teens and young adults where we don't have to have all the answers. We don't have to fix all the things. We don't have to search for them to do it our certain way. There are more than one way to do certain things. And that was actually the best decision that she ever made. She discovered a home there. She discovered actually her family there. And it was, and our relationship actually grew from that decision alone. So be curious throughout the process. And when we engage with our kids, still do all the things. Look for opportunities for healthy touch. Look for opportunities for eye contact. Look for opportunities to moderate our voice quality, because teens are highly attuned to that. But be curious about what they're exploring. And what's really cool about it is you may actually find that you like some of the same stuff that they like. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's really unbelievable when we think about the opportunities that we have. And I know in my home, I saw it, we sort of got to redo the attachment cycle when one of my girls had a surgery and she needed me to literally meet every need she had. So it was like she had to use her voice for me to understand what she needed. And then I responded by, you know, meeting the need. And it was just the cyclical evolution thing. And it's just never too late with these teens to see the need and meet the need. It just doesn't look like a baby. It Mm-mm. just doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't. And an interesting part is sometimes it does, though.
Yeah.
And so what I think we forget to as we, if we've raised them from a younger age, we think this is the way it's going to go. And then when they hit that adolescence, oh my goodness, everything's changing. And if we can be open and curious to what those changes are going to look like, it can create a lot of good opportunities for us. Just like your baby needed you to step in and relive that attachment cycle and meet all the needs again, there's going to be those moments every now and again.
Sure.
And we just take those opportunities as we can get them. Mm-hmm. My youngest allowed me to walk her to school until she completed the 11th grade. And I mean, I'm talking about what I live on the campus or right across the street from the school. So I was able to walk to the front door and leave God. With a hug and a kiss. Okay. And if I wasn't open to it, I would have missed out on that opportunity, you know? And so there's plenty of other stuff in there, but we take advantage of those little opportunities for connection because that's what my child needed at that time.
Right. Right. Oh, I just love that. I think it's, you know, I think sometimes we're scared because just like you said, things can tumble into the dark abyss that we're so afraid of. But I don't think the first step lands us there. And I think mm-hmm. when we think about things like giving a kid a voice and behavior matching and stuff like that, and that it looks different, but their need is so similar. I mean, mm-hmm. walking your 11th grader to school every day and getting a hug and a kiss when you get there, nobody expects that, right? And so we can't plan the other way either. We can't mm-hmm. plan into the demise of the kids either. What about empowering? Sometimes we think of empowering as pretty cut and dry, but how do you see these principles and strategies playing out with the teens?
You know, empowering is very, very similar as with younger kids. We want to make sure that our kids have plenty to eat or plenty of opportunities to eat. And especially raising teenagers, they're eating all the time. So having those healthy options, I think it's fantastic, especially when people adopt teens, to have that yes basket available to make sure that they can say yes, and explaining the yes basket. Not just saying, I want you to ask me for the snack every time. Say, I never got that opportunity to give you yeses. And it's super important that you know that I'm going to give you yeses, because with teens, it feels like we're doing a whole lot of correcting. Mm-hmm. So providing those opportunities for healthy snacks, for hydration, making sure that they are getting their basic needs met, but then really getting creative with them when it comes to their choices or choices that we have. We want to lay out their choices for success. I can think of a time when one of my kiddos was running late to work. And for whatever reason, they didn't have that opportunity to take care of their chore. Now, if I was working in my downstairs brain or in my traditional brain, I might say you can't go to work until you finish your chore, which is something that I might have done when they were 9 or 8. Okay. But I don't do that as an adult. I don't walk in late to my office and say, I'm sorry, but I had to wash the dishes before I came to work.
Right.
My boss wouldn't accept that. So I empower them with opportunities and knowing that we've got their back no matter what. And that becomes a teaching moment later. You know, the dishes are still going to get done. The things are still going to get done, but I'm not going to be such a hard case on my kid to make sure that we're doing things the old way. We just have to be a little bit more creative in how we empower.
Right. Right. And I think it's interesting because I believe we set the bar higher for the kids than we do ourselves. Right. There are plenty of days that I have a bad attitude and nobody's like, go to your room, Sarah. Like, although that might be the best thing for me in particular as an overwhelmed adult would be just to get some quiet. But we really do. Like, I don't think anything about it if I walk out the door with the dishes in the sink. Mm-hmm. I won't think about it the whole day long. And we have our kids sitting there like, if they leave without doing the dishes, then their brain could really be preoccupied by that because of what might happen consequence-wise when they get home. But it's just life. Mm-hmm. It is.
So setting that stage and recognizing that they're still learning, they're actually going to be really creative during this period, and I love it. Mm-hmm. But it can be really frustrating because they're exploring different ways of doing things. And they're going to make some really, really bad choices out there. What we hope for is while they're making their bad choices, they don't do something that's going to cause permanent damage to themselves or others.
Right.
Okay. So safety above all else. However, it's okay to explore different ways to do things. It's okay to explore a different route to take to school. It's okay to explore a different way to do the dishes to see if it works this way. I remember my child when they hit that adolescent period, about 11 for this one, they started sweeping the floor in a totally different way. And it didn't work. But I was able to empower them and let them know, okay, let's see how this works. Okay, that didn't work. So let's move on. And when I empower them by allowing them to explore, we often forget that kids need to explore, and sometimes they're going to explore, especially teens, they're going to explore different than the way we taught them. And we may actually realize that they come up with something more awesome than what we taught them.
Oh, man.
That's how growth happens. Yeah, it's beautiful.
I saw something the other day about our teens helping us to grow up. And I think that is just really, really so true. So we talked about, you know, they're going to eat all the time and having the yes basket or the yes jar or whatever you want to call it. But can you explain a little bit more about that? I don't think we've talked about that before here on the podcast.
So what we try to do is make sure that we have snacks that are available, specifically snacks, but also opportunities for hydration. I know families that have had water containers out with water bottles. And oh my gosh, stickers on water bottles these days is like the thing. So get plenty of stickers. They may share for teens their political beliefs that may not agree with yours, but we just kind of look the other way and give them that to make sure that they're getting their water. But a yes basket or a yes drawer in the fridge is our snacks that we always have available for our kids. They can have them as long as they ask. And it's good to prepare any kid that we're going to, and let them know that we're going to have and these opportunities for them. And we're going to say yes every time that they ask. And it feels a little bit redundant, especially if we've had a long-term relationship with the child, for them to ask every time. But they need to hear yes. They need to know where they can go to for yes, because our kiddos, as they're exploring the world, they're getting a lot of no's out there. They're getting a lot of no's. They're exploring their beliefs about the world, about how the world works. They're exploring beliefs about themselves and what they're, and they're mainly getting them from peers or other adults. And they're hearing a whole lot of negative out there, and they need to know that we're going to be the ones who are going to be the positive influence in their life. And I'm not talking about a moral positive influence, because that's what we're offering as well. But I'm talking about, we're going to constantly give them positive feedback. Yes, you can have this snack. Yes, you can have that. There can be a time where our kids can eat a whole lot during times. And sometimes we'll have to give them some small boundaries on that, such as when one of my kiddos was going through a growth spurt. This kid could sit on a Saturday morning eating a box and a half of cereal in one sitting.
Oh, my mercy.
Just bowl after bowl after bowl. And it was unbelievable. This kid was actually type 1 diabetic and shooting so much insulin to cover for all that sugar. And what we offered this kiddo was, you can have as much cereal as you want, as long as in between bowls, you grab something healthy. Eat a bowl of Fruit Loops and then eat an apple. Eat a bowl of Frosted Mini Wheats and then eat a yogurt. Something that was healthy in between. And we our cereal costs went down, but what we were offering was yeses.
Yep. Yeah. And on repeat. On repeat. And when we think back to the attachment cycle, that's just a whole bunch of yeses. If the baby cries and we respond, and people can go back and listen to our episode on attachment. But for our kids that didn't receive that early on, this is the whole point of this yes jar or yes drawer or yes basket or whatever you call it, right? Is that we're making up for the lost time with yeses, and we're showing them who to come to get their needs met all simultaneously. Yeah.
And if we're talking about 100,000 yeses in the first year of life, mm-hmm. and by the way, that 100,000 yeses actually what led to the pattern of attachment that our kids built their life on, their foundation on. Our kids, when they realize their attachment style and how they're going to get their needs met in the first year of life, that usually stays with them throughout their lifespan.
Right.
I mean, I think the odds are 80%. If our kids are coming to us with insecure attachment, we've got a lot of catching up to do. And the best that we can do that is give them hundreds of thousands of yeses to make that pattern more secure.
Yep. Yep. And I think the idea, and somebody told me this, thank goodness somebody told me this when my girls were younger, that, you know, when we give a no, it's like sending them away. And sometimes we have to do that for safety, for the situation, for the schedule. Like, there's all kinds of reasons we can have to give a no. But, you know, they said, if you're giving so many no's, or you're even sending them, you know, go to your room or go do this or go do that away from me, that when they're in distress later in those teen years, they're going to go away from you and they're going to find somebody mm-hmm. that will give the yes. And that's typically, you know, or peer groups or drugs and alcohol or whatever really are those bigger fears, as opposed to just being the place where they can get the yes and the safety, and it's okay to come to me when you are in distress.
The TBRI podcast is produced by the Care and Purpose Institute of Child Development at TCU. To learn more about TBRI and the resources mentioned in this episode, please visit child.tcu.edu/podcast.